In the late 1930s, the federal government embarked on an unusual project as part of the Works Progress Administration's efforts to give jobs to unemployed Americans. Government workers tracked down 3,000 men and women who had been enslaved before and during the Civil War. The workers asked them probing questions about slave life. What did they think about their slaveholders? What songs did they sing? What games did they play? Did they always think about escaping? The result was a remarkable compilation of interviews known as the Slave Narratives. Well, the new book River of Blood, American Slavery from the People Who Lived It, highlights those narratives, condensing tens of thousands of pages into short excerpts from about 100 former slaves, and pairs their accounts with their photographs taken by the workers sent to record their stories. Richard Cahan is a noted photo historian. He has teamed up to produce more than 12 books. Most are based on long-lost archives or photographic collections. Again, the new book is River of Blood, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Cahan to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Richard. Very nice to have you.
Thank you, Joe, very much for having me.
So I talked just a moment ago about your history in doing these types of projects. So what led you to this particular slavery project?
Well, I think that the issue of slavery is so important to America today. We obviously are at a crossroads, 160, 70 years after the end of the Civil War, of trying to understand slavery, to reconcile with slavery, and to hopefully, as a country, move on.
This project that was undertaken in the late 1930s is amazing because it's really the big record, the only record that we have, and yet we don't know a whole lot about it, do we?
Right, that's true. It was extensive, as you mentioned. More than 3,000 formerly enslaved men and women were interviewed, and there were about 300 photographed, these beautiful photo portraits. And there are records about who worked on the project, but this was an age where government workers really focused on the project themselves, and they didn't realize how important it would be for history.
The book is broken up into several parts: slavery and identity, day-to-day, trauma that lasts forever, war and freedom, the pain of Reconstruction, and once a slave. How did you and your co-editor come up with this particular way of breaking up the story?
Well, we let the interviews kind of guide us on what people were saying, and they kind of became natural breaks. And I think that, you know, there's been many books written that were based on this slave narrative collection, but this is really the first book that takes these photographs, these very simple but eloquent photographs, and pairs them on a facing page with the words. And I think that that's what really makes it distinctive. It's the words are eloquent, important, but they are amplified in a sense by being able to look at the person who said those words.
You said the words were eloquent, but you also said the photographs are eloquent, and they certainly are. Photographs are beautiful.
Yeah, they're kind of simple photographs. These are not done by really professional photographers. These photographs were taken by the workers, as you mentioned, who interviewed these formerly enslaved men and women. And usually the interviews lasted for, I'd say between 15 minutes and a couple of hours. And at the end of the interviews, in 300 occasions, the interviewer just asked if they could take a picture. And so the pictures are posed, but they're kind of spontaneously posed. It's not like they were given a day to think about it, and there's an authenticity to the pictures. What people are wearing, their canes, their out. You can see their surroundings. One man poses in kind of a cornfield, and a woman poses in the midst of her sheets on the line. It's a really magical, you know, moment. Photography, like all the arts, can have these magical moments, and I think that that's really the basis of this book.
One of the things
I think it's surprising for most people to realize that any formerly enslaved man or woman was ever photographed. We see some kind of period photographs in the 1860s, but to see people grown, you know, who lived through slavery as children and grown, and people who are very thoughtfully looking back at their lives and trying to kind of figure it all out and set it in context. Joe, I'm interested in what struck you as you read through the book.
One of the things that struck me is that these are mostly very elderly men and women. And so in that, it is it tells us the people who are telling these particular stories are really their survivors, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, I agree. And I'm amazed at their memory.
Yes.
And I want people to know, as sad and disheartening as these stories are, we didn't just pick outliers. We didn't pick the worst stories or the best stories. We picked stories that were very representational, so very representative of what others had said. So when we talk about violence and dungeons and whippings, it's not like one person said this. It was just repeated constantly. But I hope, and I'm interested in your thoughts, that it's more a book of survival and humanity rather than just focusing on violence.
Right, survival and humanity. The interesting thing too is in the narratives, how were those collected? Because in most cases, it seems as though the exact words there is a that they I'm stretching to find the exact term here of what I'm asking of meaning it's verbatim as to what they said. You can imagine the people saying it. It is not transposed into formal English in any way.
Right. We use the black vernacular English of the day for most people because that's how they were taken down by the interviewers, who were mostly white, who were mostly Southern. They were mostly women. And we thought about changing that because it's a little difficult to read at first, kind of like the first time you ever encountered Huckleberry Finn in high school. But once you go through a few of the narratives, and it's just a few paragraphs, I think most of the words are very clear. And we did provide a glossary for people who are having trouble with the words. But there's a certain beauty to this black vernacular English that I think is important to save.
You have the quote from the narrative, and then you have a biographical piece on the person, telling
right.
us pretty much when, if we know, born, when they were born, when they died, and a little bit about their life. One such individual is Squire Dowd. Says, Negro women having children by the masters was common. My relatives on my mother's side, who were Kellys, are mixed-blooded. They are partly white. We, the darkies, and many of the whites hate that a situation like this exists. What leads you to, in a large narrative, or assuming, you know, in the 45 minutes or so that, or 15 minutes or so that was spent with an individual, that you take that part out, and then that matches with the photo on the opposite page?
Right. We tried to look for a very expansive description of slavery. So we wanted descriptions of birth and slave auctions and early childhood memories and things like what he's talking about, which is breeding. We talk about freedom. We talk about the Civil War. We talk about looking back. So we took what we thought were the most eloquent portions of each transcript, and then we edited it so that there wasn't repetition, that if somebody had a secondary, very eloquent thing, they would talk about that. So we wanted to give a really expansive picture of what life was like for slaves.
There is a story here, Esther King Casey, who says the town was filled with soldiers for several days. They assembled about the courthouse and had speakings. One day I passed there with my papa and saw Abraham Lincoln hanging from a noose in the courthouse square. Of course, it was only an effigy of Abraham Lincoln, which was used to show what the soldiers thought of him. Papa told me that the soldiers shot the effigy full of bullet holes before they left town. That
yeah.
is such a striking story.
You know, I think, Joe, that you'll find that all the stories are very specific and very particular. So, you know, as we read about slavery as kids or as young adults in high school, we're kind of getting this overview of the North versus the South or the mercantile view of cotton. And here are 96 stories that are just incredibly specific, but also symbolic of aspects of slavery, I think.
What did you learn from the project? Again, you've done a lot of things like this. What did you learn from this particular project?
Well, I learned about the eloquence of older people as they look back at life, and I was interested in what they remembered.
The name of the book is River of Blood, American Slavery from the People Who Lived It, Interviews and Photographs of Formerly Enslaved African Americans. The book is absolutely beautiful the way it's set up. It is published by City Files Press. Richard Cahan is the co-editor of the book River of Blood. Richard, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, River of Blood, American Slavery from the People Who Lived It. The book is published by City Files Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.